So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter Number 10. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Text number 30. Vidyasor Atmamayam.
Vidyasor Atmamayam.
Hridayam Nirabhijyata.
Hridayam Nirabhijyata.
Manaschandra iti,
Manaschandra iti,
Sankalpa kama eva cha,
Sankalpa kama eva cha,
Vidyasor atmamayam,
Vidyasor atmamayam,
Hridayam niravidyata,
Hridayam niravidyata,
Tato manaschandra iti,
Tato manaschandra iti,
Sankalpa kama eva cha,
Sankalpa kama eva cha.
Nididhyaso.
Nididhyaso.
Being desirous to know.
Being desirous to know.
Atmamayam.
Atmamayam.
Own energy.
Own energy.
Hridayam.
Hridayam.
The location of the mind.
The location of the mind.
Niravidyata.
Niravidyata.
Was manifested.
Was manifested.
Tata.
Tata.
Thereafter,
thereafter.
Mana.
Mana,
the mind,
mind.
Chandra.
Chandra,
the controlling deity of the mind, the moon, iti, thus, sankalpa,
determination,
kama,
desire,
eva,
as much as,
cha,
also.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. When there was a desire to think about the activities of his own energy, then the heart, the seat of the mind, the moon, determination in all desire became manifested. Purport. The heart of every living entity is the seat of the Supersoul, Paramatma, a plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without His presence, the living entity cannot get into the working energy according to his past deeds. The living entities who are conditioned in the material world are manifested in the creation in terms of respective inclinations inherent in them, and the requisite material body is offered to each and every one of them by the material energy under the direction of the Supersoul. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita 9:10. When therefore the Supersoul is situated in the heart of the conditioned soul, the requisite mind is manifested in the conditioned soul, and he becomes conscious of his occupation as one is conscious of his duty after waking up from slumber. Therefore, the material mind of a living entity develops when the Supersoul sits on his heart, after which the mind, the controlling deity, moon, and then the activities of the mind, namely thinking, feeling, and willing, all take place. The activities of the mind cannot begin without the manifestation of the heart, and the heart becomes manifested when the Lord wants to see the activities of the material creation. Bandeha. Shri Rupam Sadra Jatam Sahagama Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sujivam Sadaitam Savadutam Varijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sivishakam Vitamsha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gaurani Prasarine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashchatya Shatarine. So, would you like to realize your full potential? Or would you not like to realize your full potential? The human life is a very potent opportunity to achieve the highest perfection of consciousness. And if one can utilize that human life properly under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, carefully following his instructions with full sincerity, with full determination, with full enthusiasm, and with full patience, then you can actually achieve the supreme perfection of existence. You can see God. You can associate with God, Krishna. So, if one is serious to do this, the knowledge is all here in these books. It's all here. Prabhupada has made everything available in these books. If one takes full advantage of these books, he achieves the topmost perfection. In this material world, everyone's trying to get some big position. They want success in this way and that way. If one studies the Vedas, you can see that actually there are very high levels of success that can be achieved. The yogis, they have all of the ashtasiddhis. And you can actually, by proper execution of Vedic principles, one can become a demigod, the higher planets. You can even become Lord Brahma, the Lord of the entire material universe. These positions are available. You just got to work your way up the ladder. Just like in the corporate world, you work your way up to be the CEO. You can work your way up to being Lord Brahma, so the CEO of the whole universe. Big time corporation. But those who are really intelligent, they realize any position in this material world is temporary. Even if you get the post of Brahma, how long will it last? This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text number 16. Abrahma bhuvana loka punaravartinarjana mam pechidakonteya punar janmanavidyate. From the highest planet in this material world down to the lowest planet, every place is a place of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place, but one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. Punar janma na vidyate. Punar means again. Na means not. Janma means birth. Vidyate takes. He does not take birth again. So those who are actually intelligent, they don't hanker for any position in this material world. They don't hanker for any position. They simply want to be the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. That's all. And they'll take any position that's given to them. They'll become a king, they'll become a pot washer, whatever Krishna wants them to do. They're just willing to do anything. They'll do anything, whatever Krishna wants. They're fully submitted to Krishna. So such persons who are fully surrendered to doing whatever Krishna wants them to do, They attain Krishna, the supreme perfection of existence, is to gain the personal contact of God Himself, to be a part of His pastimes, to have eternal, ongoing, dynamic, ecstatic relationship with the Lord. As we read in the purport to Bhagavad Gita 8.15, which is the previous verse to the one I just quoted, the pure devotee, he does not desire any material planet, nor does he even desire to achieve any spiritual planet. All he wants is Krishna and Krishna's association. That's all he wants. His only desire is associated with Krishna. So we have to learn how to associate with Krishna right here, right now. You see? That is called Bhakti Yoga system. How to learn how to associate with Krishna. Krishna makes himself very, very accessible. Nama. Sanskrit word nama, we can see how close it is to the English word name. Nama avatar, the name incarnation. Is there? If we just can connect with Krishna in the form of His name, that's the easiest way to connect. In this age, Krishna is especially accessible in the form of His name. This is why it is stated very clearly in the Brihad Naradiya Purana. Haranama, Haranama, Haranama Iva Kevala, Kalo Nasteva Nasteva Nasteva, Gatiya Anyata. Chant the holy name, chant the holy name, chant the holy name. There is no other alternative. There is no other alternative. There is no other alternative for God realization in this age of Kali. So we take advantage of this special boon that self-realization is actually, as we say, easy as pie. You just have to call out the name of the Lord with love. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Call out to your beloved Lord Krishna. I want to give myself to you. I want to love you. I want to serve you. I want to be with you. I want to always be with you. I want to always feel your presence. Krishna, 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 Krishna. In this way, if one is calling out to the Lord, beckoning Him, please give me your mercy. Please give me your kindness. Please cast your glance of mercy upon me. In this way, one will quickly advance on the pathway of perfection. And become free from all the anxieties of material existence. And realize your full potential. I mean, why not be all that you can be? Why be something less than what you really can be? It's not very satisfying to be something less than you have the ability to be. We have the ability to become perfected spiritual beings, to be situated in our original spiritual forms. We have that opportunity, that potential in this human life to do that. So if one doesn't do that, what does Bhagavatam say? Shrama eva hi kevalam. They simply throw their life down the drain. They simply threw it down the tree. So what, you made a lot of money. So much, so what, you became a famous, powerful person of this world. So what? Where are all these famous people now? They have vanished into oblivion. That's it. By their karma. You know, today they're a famous person in the world. Everywhere they go, the media follows them around. Anytime they want to give their opinion, all the press is there to report their opinion of the whole world. Today they're a big superhero in the world. Tomorrow they're a cockroach. You see? Why hanker for some big position in this material world? One should hanker to be reestablished in his original identity as the servant of Krishna. Jivera Sarupa Hoy, Krishnara Nityadas. What's my sarup? What's my original form? I'm the servant of Krishna. Sometimes people say, what's my sarup? I want to know what my form is, my perfected form. It's very simple. Lord Chaitanya has already told you what your sarup is. You're the eternal servant of Krishna. So embrace it. I remember when I was coming around the movement back in 71. And we didn't have the full Gita at that time. We just had a little abridged version. Macmillan Company didn't want to print the whole thing. We didn't have our own printing. Macmillan printed the first Gita. But they didn't want to print the whole thing. They didn't think it would sell. So they cut it way down. It was a little abridged version. So that was the only Gita we had in those days, that little abridged version. I remember how exciting it was when the full edition came out. Wow, we get the full Gita now with the Sanskrit, all the purports. It was so wonderful. We finally got the full Bhagavad Gita. And we originally only had the slimmed down Macmillan version. They cut so much out of it. But anyway, I was sitting there with this little, the original purple Macmillan Gita. You know, you write your name in the book, so if it gets lost, the book comes back to you. So I remember I wrote down, I was still known as Steve Bridge then. I remember I wrote down Steve Bridge, the eternal servant of Krishna. It was like a turning point in my eternal existence. Who I am, you see, the eternal servant of Krishna. I remember I was associating devotees, you know, checking out the process, wanting to give it a try, but I just affirm who I really am. You see. So this, we all have to do that. You have to affirm who you actually are. Your name, you've had millions of names and millions of births. That's not who you are. Your name is not who you are. You are the eternal servant of Krishna. That's who you are. You have to understand that, you have to embrace that, because it goes far beyond any other identity. A member of this family, a member of this nation, a member of this gender, a member of this or that, or this or that, or this or that. Those things come and go like the changes of the seasons. But this thing is who you really are. You are the eternal servant of Krishna. That's it. So you have to understand that, you have to acknowledge that, you have to embrace it, and you have to manifest it in practice by your thoughts, by your words, and by your activities. And by doing that, you will actually feel your spiritual identity. You will feel your spiritual self becoming manifest. And automatically get free from all of the ups and downs of the material conception of the self that we're locked into right now, called by the false ego. Ego is not dead. Sometimes we hear, well, you gotta get rid of your ego, man. But no. Ego means your identity. You don't have to kill your identity. You have to purify your identity. False ego is, I am this body, I am the Lord of all I survey, I am the center of the universe, I am God, etc., etc. That's the false ego. See? Or I'm male, I'm female, I'm Australian, I'm Indian, I'm American. This is false ego. False identity. You have to throw it off. Just like when you pass stool, you flush that toilet and get rid of that foul stuff. You see. You have to give it to this foul stuff. It's like stool. False conception of the self. You have to come to your original pure identity. I am the eternal servant of Krishna. By embracing that, you achieve what great yogis cannot even achieve after millions and millions of years of practice. It's so profound how in this age, in a very short time, you can surpass the perfections of the yogis and the great jnanis simply by embracing this principle tightly within your heart. I am the eternal servant of Krishna. It's interesting in this verse, the mind is in the heart. We've been taught to think the mind is in our brains. But actually your mind is in your heart. An interesting, the mind is a subtle covering of the Atma, the self. You see, the self, the Atma is seated in the heart. The actual self is seated in the heart. And the mind is a subtle covering, so it's naturally in the heart as well, because it's a covering of the actual self. It's an interesting experiment. You can get some people together, you can say, okay, point to your ear, point to your nose, point to your eyebrows, you know, point to your teeth, point to yourself, and see where do they point. People point here. You try it sometime. People always point here. They point right here. It's amazing. Because intuitively we know that I'm actually here. I, the self, am actually seated right here. That's why I actually am. So we have to come out of this, as one songwriter said, the scientific delirium madness. We've been taught, we've given so much misinformation from day one, you know, all the classes we attended in school, all the books we've read, all the reports on the internet and whatever. We've been completely bombarded with misinformation about who we are and what is real. That it's hard to get it straight sometimes. We have to rewire our brains by hearing from the scriptures, by hearing from great acharyas, by hearing from the spiritual master, by hearing from the devotees. We've got to, you know, rewire, get our brains back in order so we can actually see things clearly and actually act in a way which is beneficial for ourselves and beneficial for others that we're dealing with and beneficial for the world at large. Now, due to ignorance, we're acting in ways that are destructive for ourselves, destructive for our associates, and destructive for this planet. Why is the planet in peril right now? Because everybody is acting in ways that are destructive for this planet. Because they're acting in ways that are destructive for themselves. Because they have a false conception of the self. Therefore, we have to come back to the understanding, I am the eternal servant of Krishna. So there may be some questions. Can you please explain the Sri Sampradaya and the Gaudiya Sampradaya difference? Well, there's four Vaishnava Sampradayas. She is coming from Lakshmi. And the Gaudiya Sampradaya comes from Lord Brahma, the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. They are both bona fide Sampradayas. However, the Gaudiya Sampradaya has a special advantage in this because the Lord Himself has appeared a mere 5 centuries ago in the Gaudiya, in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So this particular sampradaya coming from Lord Chaitanya is very, very potent. And therefore we recommend that everyone take advantage of this Gaudiya Sampradaya, especially since one of the most powerful acharya in the history of the world, has recently come, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Gaudiya Sampradaya was already super powerful, and then you have all these great acharyas, Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. So you'll find the greatest facility actually for perfection in this age is in this Brahma Manva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Between the Uddhava Gita and the Bhagavad Gita, which Gita is supreme? Why do you think only one is supreme? Every Gita is supreme. How to discriminate among devotees? How to do what? Discriminate? Yeah. Among devotees in order to serve them the best. In other words, how do you know who's an Uttama, Kanishtha, and Madhya? There's three different levels of devotees. There's the neophyte, there's the intermediate, and there's the advanced. That's called Kanishtha, Madhyama, Adi, and Uttama. The greatest benefit is in serving those who are advanced, but we don't neglect the others as well. We serve everyone. So how do you discriminate? Well, you have to just read the books and see what the descriptions are. One way that Prabhupada describes the difference is the Kanishtha, he doesn't have very solid faith. He's not really completely convinced yet of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. He has a lot of doubts about it. Well, is Krishna really God? Sometimes we hear Kanishtas, he say, well, I'm not sure Krishna really exists. I've heard Kanishtha devotees say such things. They're engaged in Krishna consciousness, but their faith is not strong. The Majjhima, though, his faith is absolutely solid, completely solid. The intermediate devotee, his faith is very, very solid. And then the Uttama, the difference of the Uttama is, not only is his faith solid, but he can defeat all opposing arguments. He's very expert at using logic and scripture to defeat all opposing arguments. I truly believe that I am a good person. So why is it that God has put me into so much suffering? Well, you believe that you're a good person, but you don't realize how sinful you've been in the past. And you put yourself into your suffering. It's your own karma coming back in your face. Don't blame God. You see, this is, I'll tell you right now, if you're a criminal and you say it's the government's fault that I'm a criminal, they're not going to release you. Yeah, this government, their fault. I'm a criminal. No, you didn't obey the law, so you're in the prison because you disobeyed the law. So whatever suffering, know for sure that God is not cruel. God didn't put you into your suffering. You put yourself into your suffering condition by your previous sinful activities, either in this life or a previous lifetime. As soon as you take responsibility for your suffering instead of trying to blame it on God, that's the beginning of becoming liberated. If you want to blame God for your suffering, you're going to keep suffering. You see, it's his fault. Yeah, Krishna's mean, he's nasty, he's cruel. That Krishna, I hate him because he's so cruel to me. You see, you'll remain here in this material existence. You have to understand the loving nature of God, the pure, unadulterated, unlimitedly beautiful, wonderful, loving nature of God. That's what you have to come to. So stop trying to blame God for your suffering. Take the responsibility on your own shoulders now. I sometimes come to a state of disbelief. Yeah, that's just what I was saying. That's the Kanishtha, you see. He doesn't have firm faith. You have to associate with those who have firm faith. And that will get you out of the disbelief mode. I am not able to give up my duplicitous nature. What do you mean? So you can do it. You have to desire to give it up. I am not sincere at all in chanting. Well, that's a very sincere statement. I appreciate that. You are sincere. I can see that. Somebody says, I'm not sincere, that's sincerity. So, how to develop sincerity and a genuine nature? You just have to find at what level sincerity is actually there and build on it. So, to say I'm not sincere chanting, that's, you have a sincerity of admitting you're sincerely admitting your chanting is defective. So that, from that position of sincerity, that's your position of strength. You see, I'm fool rascal. Papa said you should never think I'm Paramahamsa. You should think I'm fool rascal number one. You see, that humble position, that's where you have your strength. You have to build on that and keep. You have to build on that strength. Realizing your fallen nature and admitting it. This is my question. How to choose when the spiritual master, for those large number of ISKCON sannyasis, gurus, who being staunch disciples of Srila Prabhupada are more or less equally qualified? Does one's inclination have any role to play in this regard? Absolutely. Who do you feel most inclined to? We have so many wonderful spiritual masters in ISKCON. So, where do you feel most inclined? Where can you give your heart with the most enthusiasm and gusto? You see? That's what you should see. Where can I give my heart enthusiastically with full gusto? You see? Because the spiritual master, he's Krishna's representative. And as much as you love your spiritual master, that much your love for Krishna becomes manifest. So where can you give your love without any inhibitions? Fully give your love. That's how you should decide. Huh? On the practical side, Krishna says that one should inquire from the spiritual master and serve him. So, on the practical side, where is the best opportunity for rendering service to the spiritual master and inquiring from him? Because Krishna states like that in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 34. He says, Tadvidi pranibhatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshana. Just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So where do you have the best facility to inquire from him and to serve him? That's another very practical way of looking at it. That's how you can best carry out the order of Krishna given in the Gita. We originally were associates of Krishna, and due to our own desire to enjoy, we came to this material world. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned that we are reunited with Krishna in his abode. We will never come back here. How did we fall down in the beginning? As how come we may not do this, so that we may not do the same mistake? Thing is, you can fall down once. Some people say, well, if Krishna says those who return to my abode never fall down again, then how can we fall down to ever fall down? They're confused about it. They don't realize you can fall down once, you see, but once you've gone through it and gone back, you'll never make the same mistake twice. If you have parents who keep on blaspheming Krishna and you're the only child of them, do you perform your duty of taking care of them and be with them despite they do not respect that you're practicing? It's better to avoid such parents who are blaspheming Krishna as much as possible. If you have other If you have other brothers and sisters, let them take care of the parents, and you focus on Krishna consciousness. Someone, make them devotees. Give them a lot of love, give them a lot of prasadam. That's the best thing. If you can make them devotees. But to hear blasphemy, one should not hear blasphemy. Anyone is blasphemous, you have to defeat them. Either defeat them or give up their association. Because of separation from Krishna, time immemorial, by association with the material world, we have many millions of material desires. Now how can I develop a strong desire to serve only Krishna and nothing else? Well, you have to realize that it's your only hope for becoming happy. Sometimes hearing that we are an eternal servant of Krishna can sound limiting or restricting. It can trigger a negative emotional response. I mean, I have to be a servant? Oh my God. Right? Oh my God. I wanted to be the master. Well, that's why you're here. You didn't want to be a servant. How can we change our mindset so that we hear and affirm that we are Krishna's eternal servant? We trigger a positive emotional response. Just think of Prabhupada. You see, just see how glorious it is to be fully absorbed in service to Krishna. When Prabhupada is here, all of us, we were mostly hippies in those days, but we saw this amazing person. See, the hippies, we rejected all authority, I'm God kind of a philosophy. And it didn't really satisfy us. But then we saw Prabhupada, here's someone who's fully surrendered to his spiritual master. He's fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And he's just the most amazing, empowered, blissful, intelligent, loving person you could ever imagine. So for us, just seeing Prabhupada is all it took. All we have to do is see Prabhupada, that's it. I'm going to be the servant of Krishna. If I can be like that, I'm in. Sign me up. Is it? So you have to see those who are actually fully absorbed in serving Krishna and see how ecstatic it actually is. That's what you have to see. If the mind is in the heart, what is it that feels like wandering around our head? What is it that feels like wandering around our head? I don't understand the question. What is it that feels like wandering around our head? I'll have to table that one for a minute. Can the person explain what you mean? You feel like you have something wandering around your head? Actually, we have sensations in every part of our body. You have physical, you can feel in your head, you can feel in your toes. There are sensations in every part of the body. So just because you have a sensation, I may have a sensation in my toe. That means my mind is in my toe. You see, the consciousness is seated in the heart, but it extends out. It's like the sun manifests its rays. The consciousness is expanded out through your body. You have consciousness in your finger, in your earlobe, your head. Because you have some consciousness there, it doesn't mean the mind is present there. It means the influence of the mind is expanded out in all these various parts of the body. That's what it means. Why grihastha life is like a dark, deep, dark well? Actually, grihastha life is not a deep, dark well. Grihamedi life is a deep, dark well. A materialistic householder who is simply absorbed in sense gratification without any God consciousness, it is a dark well. But grihastha life means grihastha ashram, an enlightened life of spiritual perfection. So it's not a dark well. Only grihamedi life is a dark well. Krishna conscious grihastha life, who strictly follows our regulative principles, they are liberated souls. Even within this body, is it important to visit the Holy Dham? It is important. And what one must do in the Holy Dham? fully absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness. What I like to do to remind myself of the potency of the Dhamma is whenever I go to Vrindavan or Mayapur, as soon as I get out of the taxi cab, immediately dandavats. I need to get down in the dirt and just offer my dandavats because now I'm in Krishna's abode. It's a reminder. It's not some regulated principle in the scriptures, but it's just something that I do to help me remember. Now I'm not in an ordinary place. I get down in the dirt. I get out of the cab and get down in the dirt. I don't care if somebody's, what, it may be filthy, it doesn't matter, it's the holy name. I get down in the dirt and offer my dandavats as soon as I get out of the cab. So if you remember that this place, just like you go on the altar, those who are Brahmins, they can go on the altar. It's a very, in the altar you don't like gossip or, you know, you have to be very, very Krishna conscious. You're right there with Krishna. So the Dham is like being on the altar. It's not a place for mundane consciousness. You have to be very, very absorbed in Krishna 24/7 when you're on the Dham. Should a devotee at the end of his life cultivate Krishna consciousness in the holy Dham? Either do it, yes, if possible. If not possible, then this is also a holy Dham. This temple is a holy Dham. Or make your home a holy Dham. That's the 10th principle of bhakti, not the 10th principle. It's the, the 7th principle given by Rupa. Principle number 7 by Rupa Goswami is to reside in a holy place like Vrindavan or Dwarka. Principle number 7. How does Lord Shiva remove our false ego? He's a pure devotee. He's completely free from false ego. So if you beg his mercy, he'll help you. Could you please explain what Sanatana Dharma means? Sanatana Dharma is the eternal occupation of the soul. It is the original nature of the soul. The eternal original nature of the soul. Everything has its dharma. Dharma means the natural position. Just like, what is the dharma of water? Liquidity. You can artificially freeze it and make ice, or you can heat it up, evaporate it, and make water vapor. You see? But those are artificial. Water in its natural state is liquid. So similarly, you, the jiva soul, the living entity, have your natural, you have your dharma, your natural state of consciousness. By artificial manipulation, you can identify with the material body, but that's like ice or water vapor. When you come back to your original natural position, I'm the servant of Krishna. So the eternal dharma, actually, the real meaning of dharma is Sanatana Dharma. When you come to actual dharma, that is Sanatana Dharma. I'm the servant of Krishna. Could you please throw some light on Lord Ram's disappearance? I'm going to save that one. We have time. We have 10 minutes. Some preachers are saying that at the neophyte level, it is fine for grihasthas to have illicit sex. It does not stop one from taking shelter, even initiation. Please clarify. Well, in our movement, we have people who are initiated and people who are not initiated. For those who are not initiated, they may not be following all of our principles, and for them that's okay. That's the level they're at, and that's okay. Everyone can come in their own level and gradually come to the higher levels of consciousness. Everyone's welcome to come and chant, relish the nectar of the holy name, take prasadam. Come enlivened in Krishna consciousness. Now we do have regulated principles. They're called the regulated principles of freedom because they liberate you from the bodily concept. But some people may not be to follow all of these principles. So they're still welcome. We love you. Everyone come. Whether you can follow all 4 of our regulated principles, or you can follow only 3 of them, only 2 of them, only 1 of them, you can follow any of them. Come and chant with us. Be a member of our movement. Everyone's welcome. But for those who are very serious, who want to get out of the cycle of birth and death in this lifetime, we have something called initiation that you can do to be, you know, really, really come to the perfectional stage in this lifetime. And we have four regulative principles: no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, and no gambling. No illicit sex means we only use sex for procreation. That means you're married, you don't have sex for recreation, you just have it for procreation. And those who aren't married, they don't have any sex at all. So, the question is, can you violate that principle and become initiated? Then it's not really initiation. It's a show of initiation. If one is not actually following the principles and he's initiated, he's not really initiated. It's just a show of initiation. He's not really initiated because he hasn't really surrendered to Krishna. Prabhupada said that deathlessness begins from the day of initiation, but if you follow the instructions. So if one takes initiation and doesn't follow the principles, they're not really initiated in the real sense of the term. They're still caught up in karma chakra.
If somebody wants to get initiated, can they still go on breaking?
If someone wants to get initiated, then they should, and they're having trouble with this principle, then they should talk to some householders who are fixed in this principle, who know how to avoid it and how to get a higher taste. And get help and counseling so they can, you know, they can free themselves from this habit. Because actually, Krishna consciousness is, why do we have sex anyway? Because it's fun, right? It's a lot of fun. It's really enjoyable. How can you give it up when it's the most fun thing you can do in this world is have sex enjoyment? Only if you get some higher pleasure can you give it up. So, but there are householders who don't have sex at all unless they're trying to have a kid. And they're not trying to have a kid, they're just completely celibate and they're completely blissful. They're not agitated by sex desire and they're relishing nectar at every minute in Krishna's name. So if one is having a hard time to come to this point, then one should take help from someone who is situated on that position of getting so much nectar from Krishna consciousness that they don't even think about it. They couldn't even, sex is the last thing that ever even crossed their mind because there's so much relishing Krishna consciousness.
Can they still get,
yeah?
If one cannot control, can they still, if they are sincere about,
if one is not able to follow this principle, one should not take initiation, obviously. It's like saying, well, I'm still having hamburger once a week, is it okay to get initiated? No. I'm still, smoking a joint every couple of days. Is it okay, Guru Maharaj, if I get initiated? Oh yeah, no problem. That's not a real guru, even. The spiritual master has to be very strict. Otherwise, he can't deliver his disciples back to Godhead. Oh, we got a 9 today. Wow, a special benediction from the demigods. The temple demigod. That's wonderful. Because I have a big stack of questions here. We'll close it at 9 for sure. Yeah, today I have 4 lectures. It's like one, like a non-stop lecture practically. In this age of Kali, where unexpected things happen, some bring a lot of misery, some bring happiness. How does one balance between running day-to-day competitive life where only the fittest survive and at the same time follow devotional service? It's not difficult. Someone thinks, well, the devotee is supposed to be very humble and meek and tolerant, and I do that in the workplace and they step all over me, they abuse me like anything. Well, when you're with the devotees, you should be a lamb, and when you're out to the material world, you should be a lion, Prabhu. a lamb at home and a lion in the chase. There's an example in this regard. There was one snake who became a cobra, one of these big dangerous cobras. He became a devotee. And he had a really wonderful spiritual master. Narada Muni was his spiritual master. So he used to harass the villagers, you know, and they were completely afraid of him. Every time he would show his head, they would run away as fast as they could. So now he's a devotee, and they're taking advantage. Oh, now he's a humble Vaishnava. He won't bite me. So the children would throw rocks at him and harass him. So he said, Guru Maharaj, what should I do? They're torturing me. Now, what can he said, show your hoods, but don't bite. So you have to show your strength. Sometimes when a devotee is abused, he has to show some strength. It's not a violation of humility. Because others have to be trained. One thing is to be humble, but the other thing is a devotee has a duty to train others how to be proper as well, you see. So devotee, even amongst devotees sometimes, someone may be very offensive, I can just tolerate it, or I may, if that person needs to be trained, then one can show some strength also to train that person. So that principle is there. A disciple may not always get personal association of guru. There may be other disciples doing personal service, or one may hesitate to approach guru due to nervousness or fear of making mistakes. Is it okay first to hear his lectures and take guidance for major issues, or should one try to render personal service also? Well, I know when Prabhupada is here, in the early days, everyone can render personal service. But, you know, the movement grew. It's like when there in Atlanta, when Prabhupada came, there was about 300 of us there. And every devotee would love to render personal service to Prabhupada. Is it practical? No. He had his personal servant. At that time it was Shutakirti Prabhu, Kijai, whatever, fortunate devotee. Actually, I can tell you the story about Shutakirti Prabhu. Shutakirti Prabhu. There was a big festival in 1972 in New Vrindavan. In those days, there was no Mayapur festival. The big festival every year was Janmashtami at New Vrindavan. That was the big thing for ISKCON in those days. Devotees came from all over to New Vrindavan. And so there was one devotee and we went up on the top of the hill. There's actually a video of this. You can get the video of the festival. It's amazing. There's a pavilion on top of the mountain. And Prabhupada would go up every day in this pavilion. And we would all sit up there with Prabhupada on the top of the mountain, under the shaded from the sun. And here, and the wonderful breezes coming through the mountain breezes flowing through the pavilion, sitting under Prabhupada. It was so heavenly, you couldn't believe it. It was ecstatic. But there was one devotee down in the kitchen cooking for all of us during the whole festival. He hardly heard Prabhupada at all. He was down there slaving in the kitchen to cook for all 300 of us. Shutakirti. He was frustrated like anything. I have to do this duty. I can't be there hearing Prabhupada. But he surrendered to it and did his best. And then after the festival was announced, now Shutakirti will be Prabhupada's personal servant. So he did the needful. Even though it was so austere, missing all the nectar to cook for us, you know, but he got to be Prabhupada's personal servant. So the thing is, you just have to do your duty, and whatever the spiritual master wants you to do. In that case, Prabhupada told that we should follow our temple authority. And his temple authority said, you're going to cook during this festival. You will be the cook during this festival. So he understood, Prabhupada wants me to follow my temple authority, so I will do that. So by following your your authority, your temple authority. That's actually how you can be the best servant of your spiritual master. So one should always be eager to do personal service stuff. Whenever there's an opportunity, you should grab it. And I remember in Atlanta there, as I mentioned, there was 300 of us there. And where's the opportunity to do anything for Prabhupada personally? I had gone through the yajna for second initiation that morning, and now I'm getting ready to go up, you know, and meet with Prabhupada to get my thread. Now's my chance. I made a nice fruit plate up. I was all set to go when they called me. The announcement was made, like, now the devotees will be called up to see Prabhupada. So I had the whole fruit plate ready and give Prabhupada a nice, at least I can do something. I can give him a nice fruit plate when I go for my Brahman thread. But then the whole thing got delayed. And I wasn't able to take the fruit plate up. And then the afternoon, all of a sudden, without any warning, all the second initiates should come now to Prabhupada's quarters. And I couldn't get the fruit plate. I missed the opportunity to bring in the fruit plate. But then the next day, there was another opportunity. There was a scientist came, Dr. Wolf. You can see him in some of the videos. He's a German scientist who was attracted to Prabhupada. So Dr. Wolf came, an elderly professor. So Prabhupada wanted that there should be a chair for Dr. Wolf. Not that he used to sit on the floor like all of us brahmacharis and brahmacharinis. So Prabhupada said, he requested a chair should be brought. And everyone's looking, Prabhupada wants a chair to be brought for Dr. Wolf. Everybody is thinking, where's the chair, where's the chair? I want to be the one that finds the chair. Someone's looking at it in the hallway, looking here. No one could find a chair here. But I couldn't believe my unbelievable good luck. I was standing right on Prabhupada's. I would get close to Prabhupada as my only chance. And I would stand right by the, I would sit, get right by the Vyasa-san. I was sitting down on his right side on the Vyasa. I looked behind the Vyasa-san. I couldn't believe that there was a chair. And nobody saw it except for me. Here's my chance. Once in a lifetime, you know, Prabhupada wanted something and nobody could do it, but I could do it. I couldn't believe my good fortune. So I had to vote, it was facile, I had to motion to the devotees like this, the devotees made way, and I brought the chair out and gave it to Dr. Wolf. You see. So it's, one should look for those opportunities. It was a very special moment of my life. Prabhupada wanted a chair to be brought for Dr. Wolf, and there was 300 of us, and nobody got it together, but somehow I got to be the one that brought the chair. So everyone should look for those opportunities. How I can render some personal service. But the most important service is to serve the mission of the spiritual master. I see, that's the most important service. That you should embrace and worship. I must serve the order of my spiritual master. I must serve the mission of my spiritual master. That association you can get at every minute. That's called the Bani Sangha. Guru Bani Sangha. Well, we're not going to get all of them. I'm afraid 9 o'clock is coming very soon. How important is Mangal Arati in our spiritual life? Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book that every devotee should rise by 4 o'clock, take his bath, and have Mangal Arati, and then absorb himself in chanting Hare Krishna. That's Prabhupada's instruction in the Krishna book. So how important is that instruction? Well, if Prabhupada gave it, it must be important. Otherwise, why would Prabhupada give that instruction? As the grahastha living far away from the temple, what time can we do Mangal Arati at home? Well, if 4 o'clock is too much, there's a concession, and that is Prabhupada said an hour and a half before sunrise. So you can also do it that way. You get up an hour and a half before sunrise. And still be within Prabhupada's instructions. Can we do Mangal Arati after finishing our 16 rounds? Sure, if you get up at 2:30 or 2. Do it when the children are up by 6 or 7 a.m. No. They can attend the greeting of the deities. Govinda Mari Purusham. They have to sleep. But, why the children are going to bed early and getting up for Mangal Arati also? Why they're not getting that training from the very beginning? That would be my question. How important is book distribution? It's absolutely essential if we want to have any future for this planet. If we want to have any future for the human race, to not completely disintegrate into complete anarchy within the next century or so, we have to flood this planet with Prabhupada's books, otherwise the human civilization is doomed. What should be our mood? Save the world. Prabhupada told us in Los Angeles, he said, become perfect in understanding the science of Krishna and deliver the world. That's the order he gave us. We had to deliver the world. Please give us some tips. Oh, a practical tip for book distribution. The more you show, the more you sell. Just show them the books. All you have to do is, I'd like you to see this book. Check it out. This is an amazing book. You don't have to sell the book. Just show the book. And as soon as they see that book and they touch it, the spiritual potency will connect with the super soul within. The super soul, you buy the book, buy the book, buy the book. The super soul will sell the book. When we chant the Maha Mantra, how important it is to say the words correctly. Can we say Ram instead of Rama? Well, I'll tell you, if you study carefully, but you cannot say Ram without an on the end of it. Try it. Just think. Say Ram. Did you hear the Ram. Ram. There has to be a vowel. You can't say a consonant without a vowel. It's impossible. So the is always there. Whether you make it very pronounced Rama or you just say Ram, the is there in both cases. If you hear the japa tapes of Prabhupada, he sometimes goes Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Or sometimes he goes Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Either way is okay. That's the point. Because you're saying Rama in either case anyway. It's just a little more subtle. But it's there. Because you cannot say a consonant without a vowel. Not possible. Okay. What is the cause of causeless mercy? Well, wait a minute. It's causeless. It doesn't have a cause. How can a causeless mercy have a cause? It's simply the mercy of Krishna. You don't deserve it, but you get it. That's the meaning of causeless mercy. I didn't deserve to meet a devotee that day on the street. I was smoking a cigarette, thinking about robbing a bank, and a devotee came up and offered me a book, and my life completely changed. Did I deserve it? No. But it was causeless mercy. If Nitya Siddhas never fall, how did Nitya Buddhas originate? Well, that's interesting. I'm going to give a whole seminar on this, but I'm going to the Baltic Festival in Lithuania next month, and I'll be giving a whole seminar on the origin of the jiva, how the jiva falls down into material existence. But in 4 minutes, it's a very intricate, detailed thing. And in 4 minutes, I don't know if I can really give it justice. But Nitya Siddha means eternally liberated, and Nitya Buddha means eternally conditioned. So how can the living entities in the spiritual world are called eternally liberated and those in the material world are called eternally conditioned? So how can the eternally liberated become eternally conditioned? It doesn't seem logical, does it? Actually, Prabhupada explains they're not really, they're actually the living entities are actually all eternally liberated. We're not really in bondage. We just dream that we are. Actually, every one of us is Nitya Siddha right now. We're eternally liberated living beings. But we're dreaming something else. We're dreaming we're sats and sats here in this material world. You see? Actually, there's a letter the Prabhupada wrote to Madhavisha Maharaj when he was here in Australia. An essay, and Prabhupada describes it in detail. So, the best thing, if you really want to know the answer, you should send me an email, and after I finish the, I can send you a copy of the seminar, an MP3. Because it's a very detailed thing. Yeah?
As long as we are enjoying our gratifying senses, we are eternally conditioned.
Eternally. It's interesting. Well, how do you explain it? Prabhupada, just like he gives the example of when Brahma stole the cowherd boys and put them in the cave, what was a whole year on the earth was just a moment for Lord Brahma. In other words, time is relative. So, you may have a short dream or just a few. You may just nod out for a very short time, but. And you have a nightmare, but the nightmare seems to be going on for eternity. Some tiger is out to eat you, he's roaring, you're running, and you feel like you have lead in your feet. No matter how hard you run, you're trying so hard, but the tiger's moving in on you, and he's about to devour you, and it's just a horrible thing, and it's going on for eternity. And you wake up, oh, that was only a dream. And it was, you know, it seemed like an eternity in the dream, but actually it was just a brief moment. So in that way, time is relative. So it's kind of like, I give this example. Let's say you're a cowherd boy in Krishna's pastimes. And Krishna's getting ready to pop a glove jam in his mouth. He has it here, he's like this. And somehow you just kind of nod out in the middle of the pastime, you know. You just nod out for, you know, you're real tired of something, you nod out. And you have this dream that you're Lord Brahma, and then you're Indradev, and you go through all these different things, try to enjoy separately from Krishna in this dream. And you go through 8,400,000 different species, trying to enjoy in this way, and this way, trying to be a king, trying to be, you're a pauper, you're a leper, you're a rock star, you're a janitor, you're, so many things, you're doing this and that, you're a warrior, you're a peacemaker, you're an artist, you're a dancer, you're a singer, you're an engineer, you're a chemist, all these things, you're a dog, you're a cat, it goes on and on forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And then you contact a bona fide spiritual master, and boom, you wake up, and then Krishna, the glove jama, makes it to his mouth. So just a brief second, Tim, when he plicked the glove jama and he put it in his mouth, that eternal hell you went through was actually just it was practically not even for a second in Goloka Vrindavan it happened. And now you're back in your original position again. So your actual position is you're an eternally liberated soul, but you dream that you're something else. What it would be like if I was Krishna? You may have a daydream. Wow, if I was Krishna, you see. All right. So anyway, it's a very interesting subject matter. And we're reading different writings and discussing them in the seminar in Lithuania. It's a very detailed thing. Where the jiva comes from, how it gets in the material world, how it happens, it's described. Our time is actually up. I apologize for these questions. What I can do is save them. Of course, I'll just save these for another lecture. I'll be giving 3 more lectures today. And are all these lectures open to the public? Huh?
Where is a Madhavananda? They're posted.
Sunday face.
Huh?
Sunday face lecture is here. And the one across the road is at 10:30.
Is this public?
Yeah.
Yes.
What time?
10:30.
Is that the one, the secrets of devotional service revealed?
Yeah.
And then, I don't know that. All right. How long does that lecture go for?
2 hours.
2 hours.
2 hours. Okay. Yeah, across the road at 10:30. I can work on these questions. So we thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Kamtarak Srila Bhagavatam ki jai.
Great Srimam Sankishan Dasadikari Maharaj ki jai.